All right, so this is the first lecture in Bio 231 for fall semester 12, and I'm recording. I'll get this on the internet unless somebody objects. And we're just talking about some administrative processes here, like how to get into class, how to log into Blackboard, how to use Blackboard, okay, before we start lecture. And we said that everybody has to find a spot in lab first. All right, I'm not passing out a hard copy of syllabus in lecture right here. If you want a hard copy from me, you can get it in lab, but I didn't make a whole bunch because I emailed it to you and it's in Blackboard. You can get a copy of it anytime, but if you want a hard copy, I'd be happy to provide any of that for you. Let's see, what I was really looking for, okay, under course documents right here, here are the lecture slides that I use in lecture. Right, and on the right-hand side, where did I have it? Here it is. Oh, it's right here. Okay, so here are some, they're either PDF files or Microsoft Word documents that have my lecture notes, and then I'll show you pictures that are in the book or maybe pictures from the internet or other interesting pictures in lab. But most of the pictures you have in your textbook that go along with these slides right here. So I'm going to get started with that pretty soon. So you can print these out for yourself. But I would like to caution you. A lot of students learn in a very efficient method by taking notes. So if you print out my notes and don't take notes and you're the type of person that learns by writing and taking notes, and guess what? Then you're not helping yourself learn the information. So writing notes is very important for some people, right, to go through that motion. And as a matter of fact, you might even wish to rewrite your notes or rewrite my notes if that will help you. And everybody kind of has to discover for themselves what their efficient methods of learning are. Okay, that's something you have to discover as the class goes on. But this is probably a good way to start. And if you want to not print these out, if you want to work with a laptop in class and just edit this Word file, you're welcome to do that as long as you're not a really loud typer. Some people just really pound on the keyboard and kind of disturb people around them. Oh, you're one of those people? Okay. Or if you use the internet for other purposes, like texting or other kinds of things, then I would ask you to leave the class, right? So make sure you do anatomy when you come into class. And also your cell phones. Your cell phones should be turned off. See, nobody loves me. Nobody called me yet. Oh, it's turned off. Okay, so make sure your cell phones are turned off. No texting, so make sure you just do anatomy when you're in class. That will help you. All right, so these are the lecture notes. What else did I have up in here? Oh, this is key. Exam study guides. All right, so you want to print these things out. These will tell you how to study or exactly what to study for lecture exams. And I hope I have these by, I have them by exam. And I have 5 exams right here, but in this class we only have 4, so I'm going to have to rearrange this a little bit. Okay, this is all the right information, but it doesn't file into the proper exams right now, unless you look at the chapters. On exams, I might lift questions from the internet that you can study ahead of time that are used for the online quizzes. And or I might photocopy a diagram from the textbook and put it on your test and you have to relabel it. I'll erase the labels and you have to label it. Or other kinds of activities that I will put on a lecture exam, which is clearly defined in these study guides right here. So you want to really be intimately familiar with these study guides. It will tell you the page numbers in the book you have to read and all that other important information. All right, for getting points online, every week there's going to be an online quiz. And it's going to be due every Friday at 11 p.m. So there is one that's due this Friday even. And every online quiz you can take an unlimited number of times and there is no time limit for it. But I would click, when you're done with the quiz, save and submit, get it entered into the gradebook, and if you take a quiz 50 times, it will save your highest score and add it to your grade. All right, if you hit the X button in a window, then it puts a block in Blackboard that Blackboard doesn't know what to think about what's happening. It thinks you're still taking that quiz and then it won't let you take it again. So always hit just save and submit and you can take the quiz as many times as you want until when? The deadline. At the deadline, everything goes away. Okay, or at least that quiz goes away. The weekly modules will stay active, but the quiz opportunity goes away, which is 10 points for every week. And when you're in the website, you can tell what you have to accomplish for course points because it has an icon. What is this icon right here? A dollar sign. That means that if you complete this exercise in this weekly module, you will get course points. And if you don't do it, then you're going to be missing those points. So when we flip through these different modules in this weekly assignment, I don't see a dollar sign in this first one. Would you get course points for doing this one? No. The second one, labeling exercises. If you do these labeling exercises, do you get course points? Not directly, only indirectly. Or watch these animations, or work with this other textbook, or work with these practice quizzes. You don't get course points in your grade book. But if you take this online quiz right here, guess what? There's a dollar sign. You get course points for that. So it's easy to track what you have to do. But all of these activities here will get you on track to getting 100% on that quiz and getting 100% on the lecture exams. Okay, but I don't want to tell you it's easy. It's still challenging, even if you do all of those exercises. So you have to do all these exercises many times. Anybody know Bruce Lee? Yeah, martial artist. One of the best in the world, ever. In order for him, he wrote a number of books. He said in order for his body or for him to understand even a very simple basic move, he would have to repeat that move a number of times. And in his books, how many times did he say he would have to do just a simple front kick or block or whatever? It was 1,000 times. Then he thought he had a basic understanding of what was going on there. Okay? So if you read this book 1,000 times and work all these exercises 1,000 times, I'll guarantee you 100% on the exam. Okay? You probably don't have to do quite that many, right? Depending on what your background is, but repetition is key to this class, so don't procrastinate, please. Get started with this stuff right away, especially very early on in the class. That will be the most difficult for most students. If you look at an exam figure the first day of class, you might have to study it, go back to it again, maybe 1,000 times before you see all the body cavities by memory. By the time you're done with this class, you'll be able to look at a figure one time, and guess what happens? It just sinks right in, okay? But that means you got to do the preparation work at the beginning of the class, okay? And work with SI and work with all these other different modules that are in the class. So sometimes anatomy gets easier as the weeks progress, right? Even though there's more information as the course progresses, okay? Because your mind just gets better at learning this stuff. Okay, so those are the online quizzes. And I just need to say once again, since I have so many classes, if you miss a deadline, I can't reprogram any of these Blackboard sites because there are even 4 different Blackboard sites in this class. So I just don't have time to do that. So every Friday by 11 p.m., you got to be done. If your computer's not working, you know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough to take that loss of points. So make sure that your computer's working. And a good way to do this, okay, to make sure you don't miss a deadline, you will notice that if you go into weekly assignments right here, every week has been activated. So the whole course in Blackboard is active. Every online assignment is active. You can do all 16 weeks, take all 16 online quizzes since you have Monday off. Okay, do it Monday. And then if you do all 16 of those online quizzes on Monday, will you ever lose points because you missed a deadline? No, because it will all be done already, right? So you don't have to get 15 weeks ahead, but at least get 1 week ahead. If you get 1 week ahead and something happens to your computer or something weird happens to your schedule, you'll never get behind, at least with the online part of this class, right? Because it's all there for you, and they'll stay active the whole semester. The tests are not strictly cumulative, but just like any kind of math class or language class, you can't take a math class and learn everything the first week and then go to the second week and forget everything that you learned the first week, right? It just doesn't work that way. So there is some continuity, but the tests are not specifically designed to be cumulative. But nonetheless, all these weekly modules will stay active, so if you need to go back during the semester and review something, you can do that and work with those drag and drop exercises or animations or videos or whatever. All right, so that's kind of a whirlwind. I'll talk about Blackboard a lot more as time progresses, probably. I'll show you where your grade book is and things like that, but I think that's good for orientation. But you have to be able to get into Blackboard this week because you'll miss those course points, 10 course points if you don't by Friday. And the welcome letter tells you how to do that. I give you welcome letters if you're registering today as an ad student, but I sent that welcome letter out numerous times to everybody that has been registered. So I got a question for you. Is there anybody that's registered right now? If you're officially registered in the class and you cannot log into Blackboard, you tried to log in but you can't log in, raise your hand if you're not able to log into Blackboard, because we got to get that straightened out today. Okay, tomorrow, Wednesday by the latest. All right, I don't see any problems. Ah, that's nice. Okay, Blackboard is getting a little bit better. Okay, that's excellent. But if you do have a problem, you got to see me and we can straighten it out, or send me an email. We can do it remotely sometimes. Okay, questions about any of this kind of stuff so far before we even get to anatomy? Any questions at all? Looking pretty good? Okay. So you'll get into the flow of this hybrid class, I'm sure, pretty quickly. All right, but be sure you read the whole syllabus. That's important. All right, so let's see what I want to do here. I think I want to put this Word file on this screen over here. That's nice. And then I want to come over here, perhaps. And I want to put some slides over here. Oh, what would be really nice, I got to figure out when this class ends today. Okay, and I have that over here. 12:10. I better write that down. Because this is a new time, because it's a 16-week semester. So you guys are guinea pigs. Great. Okay, let me shrink this. I'll put this over here. I'll try to keep this over here. All right, so let's start with some definitions. Some scientific disciplines. I can rearrange these projectors a little bit if you wish. And actually what I like to do is maybe sometimes turn some of these lights off a little bit so it's a little bit easier to see. Maybe like that. How's that? As we go through the class, you can tell me what's optimal, but I think I can see people. If you have a question or whatever, you should be able to see your notes. Okay, so first we want to compare and contrast anatomy and physiology. They're two scientific disciplines. Anatomy is the study of the structure of things, and the thing that we're most interested in this class is what? The human body, right? So it's the structure of the human body, which we're all probably pretty familiar with, but we're going to learn a lot more details. And that is just the structure of how your body is put together. But that also determines how your body can function, how it moves, right? How it thinks, how can it interact with the environment, right? So the study of how your body functions is what we call physiology. So they're different disciplines, different scientific disciplines, but they're definitely related to each other. All right, so for instance, in terms of anatomy, we can look at somebody's hand and you have a bunch of digits right here. You've got four fingers and a thumb, and the thumb is kind of special because it can move anteriorly, right? It can move out in front of the palm of your hand so that you can grasp something. You can grab things with your hand because of the thumb and the joint of the thumb. All right, so that's the anatomy of your hand. Now, what happens if that joint degenerates because you have arthritis? Or maybe you put yourself through school working in the machine shop like I did and you lost that thumb. What happens to the function of that hand? Okay, I didn't lose my thumb, thank goodness, as you can see. Okay, but what happens to the function of the hand if you change the structure of the hand? Like if you take this thumb away, what happens to the function of this hand? Drastically changes, right? So the structure of your body determines what the function is. And the fundamental understanding of physiology and how your body maintains health, first you have to understand what its structure is before you can really understand what the physiology is. That's why people have to take anatomy before a physiology class. Maybe sometimes together, but even if you're taking an AP class where you learn both together, guess what you always start with first? Anatomy first, and then later on in the lecture, then you start to learn something about physiology. All right? So know these different definitions right here. Anatomy is basic to physiology. There's something else. I'll plug another class. There's something else that's basic to physiology besides anatomy. And a lot of times students don't like to take this class, but if you need to get the best grade possible in physiology, you should take chemistry first, because chemistry is basic to physiology. You can't know physiology unless you know some chemistry. You can learn a lot of chemistry without knowing any physiology, right? It works the other way, but it doesn't work if you take physiology without chemistry, and chemistry is not a prerequisite at this college for physiology, so you guys are kind of misled on that score, right? So always take a college-level chemistry class before a physiology or even before a micro class. All right, let's talk about some branches, different sub-disciplines in anatomy. There is gross anatomy, and gross right here just means big, right? A gross is a lot of something, and gross anatomy is just the anatomy that you can see with your naked eye without any special kind of instrumentation. What kind of anatomy can you see with your naked eye? Somebody give me an example. Your arm, yeah, nose, eyes, ears, things like that. Okay, that's just gross anatomy, and there's a lot of your body that you can see just with those aspects. But sometimes you need to look at cells or something that's very, very small. That's a part of anatomy when you look at cells, and we call that microscopic anatomy. You wouldn't use a microscope to look at an arm, but you would use a microscope to look at some cells that make up the arm or some cells in a bone that makes up an arm. So if you want to get very fine detail, then you would use a microscope. Developmental anatomy is the study of how a person's body changes from birth until old age. So your body does change all the time. Okay, it changes very rapidly in some circumstances, not so rapidly, but there is a part of your body that grows continuously through your whole lifetime. Anybody know what part of your body is? Think of your grandpa.
Ears,
nose. They keep growing your whole lifetime. Okay. All right, so developmental, that's just kind of a silly example, but developmental anatomy is from birth to when you pass away. Embryology is understanding how the structure of your body changes before you're born. In utero, we say that. All right, and then surface anatomy is learning some anatomy when you just look at the surface of your body. Like I can point to your elbow right here. And if you've never taken an anatomy class, you probably don't know what that part of that bone is. Okay, but when you take anatomy class, you're going to know. This is, the bone is the ulna, and that's the olecranon process. So looking at landmarks on the surface of your body, for instance, the zygomatic bone that makes your cheekbone, the olecranon process right here, you have a really good idea of what else is associated with these different structures. And just by looking or touching a person's body, we call that palpation, you know where a whole bunch of other structures are as well, just by knowing surface anatomy. Regional anatomy is knowing what organs are in some part of your body. Like if I was to point right here, you probably could tell me what organ is in this region of the body right here. I have a heart right there. Okay? So you all knew that probably. So that's regional anatomy. It gets more complicated when you get to some not so well organ systems. All right? And then there's systematic anatomy. All right, all of these anatomies right here, 1 through 6, are relatively difficult, sophisticated disciplines. The one that has the scariest term right here, systematic anatomy, is the one that we use in this class, and this is a very efficient way of learning all the different parts of your body because it breaks the body down into small pieces that we call organ systems. And that's how we're going to study anatomy in this class, is by organ systems. So that's a really nice, easy way. All right, so in order to start to know anatomy, studying anatomy, we're going to look at these different levels of structural and functional organization by the systemic method right here. And we're going to start with the smallest things that make up your body, which are chemicals. So we have certain chemicals like adenosine triphosphate, that's ATP. Does anybody have an idea what ATP is used for in your body? It's energy, right? Yeah, it powers your body. Okay, and then there are some ions like calcium and sodium and potassium right here. These are electrolytes. They actually produce electrical properties inside your body, and we are very electrical beings because of these ions right here. All right, cholesterol. You probably know some things about cholesterol. Is that good or bad for you? Both, depending on where it is, how much you have, right? So we'll learn something about that. And what about H2O? That is water. You all probably know that, but that's a nice chemical formula, right? It's not so important that you know chemical formulas and the names of these compounds right here in anatomy, but in physiology, you do have to know this. And so this is where chemistry comes into play, where you should have chemistry before physiology. We're going to look at some chemicals in this class because it's the basic building block on how your body is put together. Right, and we need to start with the basics. If we put a bunch of chemicals together, we get something that we call an organelle. Organelle is a building block of a cell. And some names would be the nucleus. Anybody have an idea what the nucleus is? It contains the genetic material inside your cells, and the genetic material is the blueprint on how to build your body. And if it's a blueprint on how to build your body, what follows from that structure? How it can function. Okay, so the nucleus is really important. It determines the structure, but then also the function of all the cells and how your body operates. Rough endoplasmic reticulum is important for protein synthesis. Golgi body is important too. So these are just some examples we'll get to in the next chapter, but this is just a little bit of an orientation. If we put a nucleus together with rough endoplasmic reticulum and a cell membrane and cytoplasm and other organelles, guess what we get? We get the cell right here. So a cell is the next more complicated piece of living matter we're going to look at. And it's the basic living unit of all life. And as a matter of fact, maybe you could write down the structural and functional unit of life is the cell. Structural and functional unit of life is the cell. So that means that if anything is alive, guess what it's made out of? It's got to have cells. If it's not made of cells, then it's not something that is alive. And in order for it to be a cell, it's got to have genetic material and it's got to have organelles. In order to be a cell, it's got to have some of these building blocks right here. Okay, there are some little particles that have genetic material, but no organelles. It can't be alive. Does anybody know a little particle that has genetic material that can pass on to future generations but doesn't have any organelles? So it's not alive. It's a virus. All right, so a virus is not alive because it doesn't have organelles. And if a virus is not alive, how can you kill it? That's why viral infections are so difficult to treat, because it's not something you can kill, because it's not alive. So there have to be different strategies, right, to deal with viral infections compared to bacterial infections. A bacteria is a cell. It has cytoplasm and it has genetic material. It is a cell. It's easy to kill bacteria compared to viruses, right? What would you take for a bacterial infection? An antibiotic, yeah, something that would kill a bacteria. Okay. Then if we take a whole bunch of cells and put them together, we get a tissue. And if all those cells look the same and perform the same kind of function, okay, then that's what we call a tissue. And all the tissues in your body can be grouped into just four different categories. Everybody should be breathing a sigh of relief right now. Okay. If you point to some part of your body, I could tell you what tissue it is, and it's going to be one of only four different kinds. We're going to learn what those different kinds are, how to identify them underneath a microscope. Right? They're either epithelium, which covers the surface, connective tissue, which connects different parts of your body together, muscle that makes something move, or nervous tissue, which transmits information long distances very rapidly in your body. Right? So that's a tissue. What's the building block of a tissue? A cell. Yeah, so that's a really important part of this class, is to know what the building blocks of an item are. Okay. A tissue, of course, is a building block for something too. And if you take a couple different tissues, put it together, and they join together to perform a certain kind of function, then we call that an organ. All right, two or more tissues working together is an organ. So, for instance, the heart is an organ, because it has connective tissue in it. It has, what other kind of tissue does it have in there? Yeah, it's got muscle, right? That's kind of a tissue. Heart is muscle. It also has nervous tissue for controlling the heart. So the heart is an organ because it has many different tissues, right? And that's an organ is a building block for something, and that is an organ system. It's a group of different organs performing one function. Like, for instance, if you have the heart, which is an organ, if you only have a heart and no other organs in your body, what good is that going to do you? What else does a heart have to have? Blood vessels, for instance, okay? Blood vessels and a heart put together make an organ system that we call the cardiovascular system. And we're going to look at some pictures of these things in just a second. And then if we put all the organ systems together, oh, what's another organ? Brain? Stomach? Part of a different kind of organ system. Brain is part of the nervous system. Stomach is part of the digestive system, right? So you'll become familiar with all these different things. And then if we put all these different organ systems together, what do we get? We get you, right? We get the organism. And if we start to study you or me right now, it's just way too complicated. So the best way to study something like you or me is to what? Break us down into smaller pieces, chop us into smaller pieces, understand what those small pieces are, and then learn all the pieces, add them together, and then you'll begin to have an understanding of how the whole organism is put together and how it functions. So, and you should do that anytime you have a complicated learning task or management task. That's a way for you to understand and overcome a difficult situation, is to break it down into smaller pieces and understand the smaller pieces first. All right, so here are some organ systems inside the body. I have 11 different textbooks breaking down into different kinds of organ systems. So here we have one. I definitely want you to know this one. It's comparative hair and the skin and nails. There are also some glands that secrete sweat and oils and things onto the skin right here. And there's also some muscles in the skin when you get cold. What happens to your skin when you get cold? Get goosebumps. So there's a muscle that's moving stuff around. So you got hair, nails, muscle, okay, even some nervous tissue in here. This is what we call the integumentary system, or the integument. You probably not have heard that at all. And if I was going to ask you for an organ system on the test, I probably wouldn't ask what system the stomach belongs to, because everybody probably knows before taking anatomy class, it would be the digestive system. I'll probably test you on something that you haven't heard unless you studied. Like what? Integumentary system, right, is all of these different structures right here. We have a chapter in the whole book, in the book, devoted just to the skin. And that is your largest organ system in your body. Okay? That's why it's kind of noteworthy. What are some others? Skeletal system. All the bones in your body make up the skeletal system. We'll learn the names of the bones in your body, probably all of them, okay? And different pieces of the bones as well. That's going to be important. Sometimes we study the skeletal system with the muscles attached to it, and in which case we would call that the musculoskeletal system. Sometimes in anatomy, we can take two words and put them together if we want to form a concept that is bridging between two different concepts, as long as we put an O between them. That's a very easy way of joining concepts together. Musculoskeletal system. But in this slide right here, I just see the skeletal system. In the next slide right here is the muscle system. We will learn names of a bunch of muscles in class and what their action is. That's going to be important. And then to understand their action, we have to know what the two ends of the muscle are attached to. They're called the origin and insertion. So depending on what part of medicine you're going into, these are very important. All right, so muscle system, nervous system. Okay, we see the brain and spinal cord. There are some components of the nervous system, and then there are peripheral nerves that leave the brain and spinal cord. These all make up the nervous system. And what do we have here? Endocrine system. That's another way of controlling your body. The nervous system controls your body, but the endocrine system does as well, but in a little bit different way. The nervous system can work very quickly over long distances, but for a short period of time. The endocrine system, for instance, if the thyroid gland here releases a thyroid hormone, it might take minutes for it to get throughout the whole body, and then maybe even an hour to change to make the adjustments that the thyroid gland wants your body to make. So it's slow acting, but the duration is going to be very long. So it can control your body for longer periods of time, it just can't act in a very fast way. So there's a difference between the endocrine system and the nervous system. They are connected in a couple of places of your body, so a lot of classes actually talk about the nervous system and the endocrine system together because they control your body. And guess what they would call that? They would call that the neuroendocrine system. They just put an O between those two terms to talk about them. OK? okay, neuroendocrine. Here's the cardiovascular system, that's easy. Lymphatic system, we could see some lymphatic vessels, lymph nodes, some other organs involved, like the spleen right here with the lymphatic system. And then here's the respiratory system, lungs, trachea, digestive system. You can see starting with the oral cavity, esophagus, stomach, intestines, and urinary system, kind of a small system, but very important, starting with the kidneys right here, okay, urinary bladder, and then here's the urethra. We'll learn about all these different parts, all right, and the diversification system. Some people call it the reproductive system. We'll study that as the last chapter, okay, in this class. When do we end? Ooh, pretty soon. All right, this is an exam figure right here. There's some drag and drop exercises in Blackboard. I'm not just going to read all these different terms to you, so you should practice the drag and drop and maybe even draw this out for yourself sometime and try to label it. In the exam study guide, you have a photocopy of this illustration right here with all the labels erased, so then you can just practice in kind of a really old archaic format. Just label this lead line right here. And that can help you get 100% if, for instance, this diagram ends up on the first test. Okay, but there's also drag and drop, electronic format that you can reset, reload, and do that thousands of times if you want. Okay, orbital refers to the eye. That's a region. Let's see, the patellar region is right here, anterior part of the knee. The tarsal region is your ankle. And so you just have to apply yourself and learn these different kinds of terms right here. And we'll start to use these terms in lab and in lecture as well. So that will help you learn them. But you definitely want to spend some time learning these because it will help you learn everything else in anatomy very nicely. For instance, if we look at the armpit right here, we see it's the axillary region. And if I say axillary region, now you know the name of the blood vessel that's in this area. You know the name of the nerve because they're named after that region of the body, right? So here's the axial vein, the axial artery. Axial nerve is in this location. So when you learn this chart right here, you learn a lot of vascular anatomy. You learn tons of muscle and probably even some bone anatomy as well as neuroanatomy. So this will pay off a lot later on in the class, even though it seems kind of not so important right at the moment. Okay, and then here is a view from behind somebody. Right, and the frontal view right here is what we call anterior. If we look from behind, right, that would be a posterior view. There is another name for posterior, and that is dorsal. So dorsal and posterior are exactly the same, just like anterior and ventral are exactly the same name. So a lot of times in anatomy for a particular organ or structure or even a view might have different names, because different people in the world studied this topic at different times and came up with different terminology, and they're used still today, right? And for instance, on a test like a practicum where you have to write an answer down, any one correct answer will work. You don't have to write all the possible correct answers, right? Just one correct answer. And I might not even know all the possible correct answers, so if I take off for it, and you can show me a reputable reference where it is used properly, then I would be happy to give you those points, okay? Maybe even extra credit point, because then I learned something. That would be cool, okay? All right, here we have some body planes on this drawn on this person right here. And our spatial dimension has three dimensions to it. And it's also got a time dimension, a fourth dimension, but basically there's three spatial dimensions. In space, you can move forwards and backwards. That's one dimension. You can move left and right. That's another dimension. That's a second one. Or you can move up and down, right? That's a third dimension. And by knowing those three dimensions, you can describe how to get from one place in the body to another place exactly, right, using these three different planes. This plane right here that separates the body from a superior part and an inferior part. Okay, and I haven't defined what superior means, but superior means on top of. Inferior means below. Doesn't mean better or worse or anything like that. Okay, but if you separate superior from inferior, that's the transverse plane right here, and this plane can move up into the neck or way down here into your ankles, but it's always going to preserve that relationship of separating something superiorly from an inferior part of the body. You can also separate something from right to left, and that's a sagittal plane. In your book, it calls it a median plane, more commonly called sagittal. And the sagittal plane can move over to the left, can move over to the right. If it is right smack in the middle, like going right down your nasal septum right between your two front teeth, right down your sternum, right through your belly button, separating your body into equal right and left parts because we have that symmetry in our body, we call that the mid-sagittal plane. So mid-sagittal is only one plane, right smack in the middle of the body like we see over here. If it's moved either to the right or left, it's no longer mid-sagittal. It is just a regular old sagittal imaging plane. And then the last one is frontal. That will separate an anterior part from a posterior part of the body. And again, right, it can shift anteriorly or posteriorly, okay, for your particular purposes. But if it separates anterior from posterior, that's a frontal plane. Sometimes it also goes by the name of coronal plane. So those are the three planes. So we could kind of just rehearse using my hand right here. What plane is this? Transverse. What plane is this? Frontal or coronal. And then this right here is? Sagittal, and then this one here is a special case, mid-sagittal. Yeah. Okay. Now, all this works as long as we put a human body in a standard form, a standard position, right? We can all take different positions. You might wake up with your arm falling asleep some morning, right, because you didn't sleep in what we call anatomic position. So in order for me to give you directions how to get from one part of your body to another, you have to be in anatomic position, just a standard position. An anatomic position is standing with your feet on the floor and you're facing forward with your arms down by your side, like this, okay? And I'm relaxed right now, but that's not quite anatomic position just yet because I can move my hands around a little bit. I can make my palms face anteriorly or I can make my palms face posteriorly. Anatomic position is when you're sort of not relaxed, so your palms are facing anteriorly. This is anatomic position. And when that happens, which way are my thumbs pointing? Toward the outside, we call that lateral. To the outside is called a lateral position. So with the thumbs facing laterally, palms facing anteriorly, this is anatomic position. So in that position, we can say on your right hand, if you're going to go from your little finger to your thumb, you've got to move over in the right direction, or you got to move laterally. But it doesn't make sense if you're not in anatomic position. So everybody has to understand that anatomic position to know these different parts right here. Let me look and see how far I deviated from our plan right here. Anatomic, directional terms. All right, you know anterior, posterior. They're the same as what? Anterior and ventral, posterior and dorsal. So you should probably fill that in on your slides. Superior means above compared to something below, which is inferior. We use these terms not by themselves, but in relationship to two structures. You always should be talking about this when you're comparing the location of two structures. You can't say that your nose is posterior to something. You can't say your nose is anterior to something, right? You have to say it's anterior to what? Part of your body. Maybe your brain, spinal cord. So you always got to mention two parts of your body when you use these terms. Superior. Your head is superior to your belly button. Belly button is inferior to your head. Let's see. When you look at an appendage, like the upper appendage right here, there's some specific anatomical terms. You might call this an arm, but it is really not an arm. Okay, between your shoulder and your elbow right here, that's your arm, and only your arm. Between your elbow and your wrist, that's not your arm, that is your forearm. Okay, and so in anatomic position, the forearm is inferior to the arm, right? So that would be a way that you would use that kind of terminology. Cranial and caudal is very similar to superior and inferior. Cranial means toward your brain or toward the cranium. Caudal means toward your tail. And people really don't have much of a tail anymore, so it's a little bit of a misnomer. But anything that goes in that direction to where if you had a tail, it would be there. That would be caudal. So this works much better for other kinds of animals than for humans, but it is still used quite a bit by people. Medial and lateral. Lateral means toward the outside of your body, from midline, like a mid-sagittal plane. Medial will mean it's more toward the midline. So we can take your shoulder and compare it to your heart. How would you talk about your heart compared to your shoulder? Is it medial or lateral? Your heart is medial compared to your shoulder. Your shoulder is lateral compared to your heart. So using that mid-sagittal plane. Proximal and deep. Proximal and distal. A little bit more complicated. If we think of that cardiovascular system, once again, you have the heart in some center location of your body, and then there are blood vessels that come off of it, coursing through your body, from a central location to a distant location. Any location that's more centrally located, we call that proximal compared to something that's farther away. We call that distal. All right, so for instance, sometimes you want to figure out what somebody's heart rate is, and you don't really want to grab them on their chest to feel their heart, though you could do that. But there's an easier way to measure somebody's heart rate, and that is to put your finger on an artery that goes right over this bone right here, the lateral bone, okay, in your forearm. So I'm using some terminology already. That bone is the radius, and then the name of that artery is called the, it's named after the bone, radial artery. We call that the distal pulse. So that we're taking a pulse that's far away from your heart. That's a distal pulse, and it's really nice superficial pulse right there, very easy, at least in a healthy person, to figure out what their heart rate is. You have other distal pulses, like in your ankle and other locations, that can be used. Right? Something that would be more proximal would be maybe like a carotid artery in your neck, okay, or actually feeling somebody's heart by palpating their chest. Okay, so proximal and distal. Proximal means closer to some center location. Distal means farther away. So the forearm is what? Distal compared to the arm. The elbow is proximal compared to the wrist. But of course, the elbow is what? It is superior to the wrist as well in anatomic position. So more than one correct answer is available. Superficial and deep, this is pretty easy. Superficial means more on the surface of your body or more on the surface of the organ. Deep means that it is more toward the interior. All right, so could you tell me the most superficial organ system in your body? Integument, exactly right. Okay, and the cardiovascular system is deep to the integument. So we'll be using these terms, but always think of anatomic position to get started. Okay. Let's see, body regions, we talked about some of these, the arm and forearm. Your lower appendage has some funny things associated with it too. Okay, so you might think that's all your leg down there, but it's not. Between your hip and your knee, that's not your leg, that's your thigh. Hip and knee is your thigh, and between your knee and your ankle, that's your leg. And that doesn't include your foot or your ankle. Okay. Just things you got to pick up. Body cavities, we kind of talked about already, but we have another much nicer picture someplace in here. And this is actually an extra credit quiz in lab for you to do. And I'll probably talk about this next time as well. But on very superficial in your body, you have a lot of skeletal muscle and your skeleton. And deep inside your body, you have body cavities that hold organs, like your heart, stomach, urinary organs, reproductive organs, and things like that. And so we name these different cavities. The cavities that make up this posterior section right here, that's what we call the dorsal body cavity. I suppose you could call it posterior body cavity. People would know what you're talking about, but more conventionally, we call this the dorsal body cavity. And it's an armor-plated cavity. It's surrounded by cranial bones right here and the vertebral column that protects the spinal cord, and the cranial bones protect the brain. And so we can break this one dorsal body cavity down into two smaller cavities. So you can have cavities with inside cavities even. Right? This posterior cavity contains the cranial cavity and the vertebral cavity. Where if we put the vertebral cavity together with the cranial cavity, what do we get? We get the dorsal body cavity. And this is nicely color-coded so that you can appreciate that. Okay. Just like you have a dorsal body cavity, you have a ventral body cavity, your anterior body cavity, and it has subcavities to it. Between your shoulders and this muscle right here, which is the diaphragm that we use for breathing, for inspiration, this is what we call the thoracic cavity. And it's sort of armor-plated as well because it has ribs that form this body cavity, and it has this armor plating because you have some vital organs in this region, like your, what? Lungs and your heart. Okay, so these ribs protect your lungs and your heart that make up the thoracic cavity. And then right below the diaphragm, we have the abdominal cavity that contains digestive organs. And then even down below it, what would be a good term to say down below the abdominal cavity? Inferior. Inferior to the abdominal cavity, yeah, is the pelvic cavity. And there's nothing that really separates the pelvic cavity from the abdominal cavity. It's a construct that we have in our mind that roughly mirrors the shape of your hip bone. Okay? And the pelvic cavity contains some organs for the urinary system and reproductive systems and a little bit of the digestive system in the pelvic cavity right here. Okay. So thoracic, abdominal, and pelvic cavity all make up the ventral body cavity. And the thoracic cavity, if we look at a nice coronal section over here, right, we can see even has some cavities associated with the thoracic cavity, like the pericardial cavity and the pleural cavities. And this is where I'm going to start next time. Okay? So I think I ask you to draw this for 1 point extra credit in lab this week. Okay? Not everything that's on the slide, just what I had in the welcome letter. Okay, which is the bold type. Okay, see you next time and in lab. Make sure you don't miss your lab, because if you miss lab this week, guess what? I have to drop you. Okay, good. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
I had a great summer. A lot of exercise. A lot of playing around.